The Baseball Tonight podcast is presented by LinkedIn Jobs.
Way out of here. Oh,
goodness. This is Baseball Tonight, the podcast.
This is the Baseball Tonight podcast for Friday, July 2nd, 2021. Producing from his home studio in the foothills of Connecticut is Taylor Schwenk. I'm Buster, only working from my home in New York. And yesterday, boy, a lot of news breaking. We'll get to that in a second. We're going to be talking with Carl Ravitch today, Ravi Train, checking in from California, Paul and Bikini's Hembo. And, of course, we're going to have Todd Radom's weekly quiz. Yesterday, Astros, Indians, Jose Altuve continues to do damage.
Nobody out. 1-2. And Altuve drills it pretty deep to left field, down the line. It's hooking, and it's a grand slam. Jose Altuve goes deep, and the Astros take the lead. They're up 5-2. Altuve's second grand slam of the season.
Robert Ford, KBME, 790 AM. Houston wins 7-2. Great game between the Braves and Mets. Early on, the Braves did what no other team has done, and that is to dent Jacob DeGrom repeatedly.
Ozzie has a good lead. The pitch. Line drive down the right field line. That ball is smoked. That ball is gone. This is the most runs Jacob DeGrom has given up in a game all year. Atlanta's tagged him for three in the first. Austin Riley hits a two-run homer.
Chip Carey, my friend on 680, the Fan. It was as if in that moment after Riley hit that two-run homer, DeGrom went back to the dugout and just decided, you know what? That's enough. He dominated the rest of the outing.
1-2 coming to Riley. And it's on the outside corner. He got him looking. Eight in a row now for DeGrom. He had a stretch of nine straight earlier this year against Colorado. And now he struck out eight straight, 14 for the night, one shy of his career high.
And he would wind up with seven innings pitched in this game. That from Gary Cohen on SNY. The Mets tied the score 3-3, and then in the bottom of the ninth inning, this happened.
Line drive off the pitcher's foot. Guillaume gets with a bare hand. Throw to first. He beat it. And the Braves win.
Braves win 4-3. Now, before the Red Sox blew out the Royals yesterday, Chris Sale spoke with reporters and says he feels like he's getting ready to return, quote-unquote, sooner rather than later. He would be an interesting piece injected into the American League East race. Jackie Bradley Jr. had a fascinating play in the Brewers 7-2 win over Pittsburgh yesterday.
And that ball is launched center field deep, and it is going to be caught by Bradley. Stallings rounded second. The throw comes in. Here are the tag. He's out. Oh, Jackie Bradley Jr. totally baited him into that. Acted as if it was gone. He had me fooled for a minute as well.
He did. Boy, what a deep job that was.
That sound from the Brewers television network. Taylor, I want to bring in on this. How cool was that play by Jackie Bradley Jr. where you see him kind of drifting back toward the fence as if, oh, that's a long gone home run. He starts to turn his back as if he's going to watch the ball fly into the stands. Boom, catches it, throws to first.
Yeah, so you sent in your email this morning, oh, can you find this Jackie Bradley Jr. play? And I don't know what to expect. I press play on it, and I'm thinking we're watching a home run. I was not entirely sure. So he totally faked me out as I was watching it this morning.
Exactly. Great play by him. Trevor Bauer is under investigation following sexual assault allegations, and he's still on track to make his next scheduled start on Sunday, according to Los Angeles Dodgers manager Dave Roberts. That start would come in Washington, D.C., unless something changes over the next 3 days. Here's Dave Roberts yesterday.
We do. As of now, we're kind of in the middle of letting the commissioner's office, Major League Baseball, handle this. It's in their hands. And right now, our kind of direction was to just move forward not do anything as far as the player and Trevor. And so our plan is he is going to start on Sunday. It's out of our hands. Regardless of what direction the organization wanted to do, it's something that this is what has to happen. And so it's out of everyone's hands.
Yankees owner Hal Steinbrenner vowed to keep manager Aaron Boone, general manager Brian Cashman, and the core of his team together moving forward. He said he has no thoughts about making the Yankees becoming a seller before the trade deadline. Here's Hal Steinbrenner speaking to reporters yesterday about his struggling team.
Look, Brian and I have been doing this a lot of years together. He's extremely intelligent. Like I said, he understands the deal when it comes to, you know, relying on pro scouting, relying on analytics, but also building areas that all teams are building, like analytics, like performance science. We communicate very well. There's not much that happens without him running up by me first. He knows that's the way I want it. I think he's done a good job. This team that we put together leaving spring training was a very, very good team. And they just haven't played up to their potential that I believe they still have, of course, because it's essentially the same team. And I'm talking about the starting lineup that, we had last year and the year before. And these aren't aging players. These guys are in their prime. They just haven't played up to their potential. And that's been the big problem. At least they haven't done it consistently.
White Sox and Twins yesterday were tied 4-4 in the bottom of the sixth inning. And this happened.
It's a brand new game tied at 4.
Zach Collins torpedoes this one to left center. It is out of here. Boy, Zach Collins up in the zone has been a demon recently, and it's 5-4 Sox.
That, of course, those were the voices of Steve Stone, Jason Benetti on the White Sox television network. By the way, speaking of the White Sox, who won 8-5, we've got the White Sox and Brewers on July 25th. ESPN announced that yesterday. We're going to be in Milwaukee, and Taylor, I'm going to be getting bratwurst.
Ooh, very nice. And our friend the Welsh Brewer is going to be very excited for that news since, we're a Brewers podcast now officially.
I know. I mean, we're just every day the Brewers are dominating the podcast.
Got to talk them. Yeah.
The All-Star starters were announced yesterday. I'll be talking with Carl Ravitch about that. Paul Imbecides also will be checking in, and Todd Radom. First, before we move forward to that, I know you got some thoughts about the ESPN radio games this weekend.
Yeah, Buster, a couple things to promote here. First off, ESPN radio games. We've got two of them. There is one on Saturday, July 3rd. You've got Yankees at Mets. Tune in at 12:30 p.m. Eastern time for that. And then on Sunday, 4th of July, you've got Mets at Yankees. Game 3 of that series. Tune in at 6 p.m. for that one as well. And also, got to watch the Euros this weekend on ESPN+. Our guy Kevin Seipolt, he called you out. He should have been calling me out for reading the copy that I wrote. He was saying, oh, Buster, you know, you're saying it's the semifinals that start today on Friday. And no, it's indeed the quarters. And Kevin is right about that. So that is my fault.
And he did that on Twitter. And it was funny when I saw that, I was like, I wonder if Taylor will see that. I wonder if he'll own it. Yeah. And he did. I gave you credit for that. I figured you probably wouldn't see it. We wouldn't even talk about it. But when I saw that, I was like, I mean, here's the reality. Like, I'm locked into the baseball season. There's so much news going on, and I'm not sure what round the Euros are in.
Have you watched 1 second of Euro 2020?
So let's talk about Sunday Night Baseball coming up.
I'm excited for
this series between the Mets and the Yankees because you got two teams on edge. We're going to be talking with Ravi about that.
You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish.
Yes. The clutch hits, the strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems, with nothing on your roof. So whoever's up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish. But you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, 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 with nothing on your roof. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit DirecTV.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package.
Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code BASEBALL. That's code BASEBALL. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live.
All aboard. It's the Rabbit Train with Carl Ravitch.
The Rabbit Train is parked on the West Coast because, Carl, your son's getting married. Sam getting married. How cool is that? And are you going to cry?
You're asking two great questions. I'm ecstatic about it, for sure. And, you know, given everything that we've all been dealing with and everybody's included in this for the last 15 months, to have people be able to celebrate something joyous, we'll take joy. So we're very excited about that. And every time that I speak, Buster, it doesn't really matter where I speak in front of family, I end up crying. I've tried really hard. I've written down a few words. There is really not a lot of – I've tried to avoid true emotional – I'll cry. Yeah, I probably will. So that's what I do when I speak in front of my family. I end up just crying. I look up and I see them and I start to cry. It's kind of strange, but that's who I am.
You and I are exactly the same then, because I embarrass especially my daughter. I never forget when my mom passed away. I spoke and gave the eulogy, and yeah. I asked Sydney when it was over, you know, how was that? And she goes, "Dad, I just couldn't believe you were crying. You're crying in front of all these people." So I've been embarrassing my daughter her whole life. And so I totally relate to, and I know I'm going to cry at my two kids' weddings for sure. The All-Star Game starters announced yesterday. I'm not going to run through the whole list. Anyone can go online and see them. I wanted to, you know, just ask you about something that jumped out at you. Something that absolutely jumped out at me, which I love, is when you have smaller markets, it's like their fan bases stand up and say, "Our guy's going to get in," and they work for it. So you get an Adam Frazier, the Pittsburgh Pirates, at second base. You get Nick Castellanos and Jesse Winker of the Reds. I love that, Carl. I've always loved that.
My reaction, Buster, to it is that it was more accurate than it usually is. It's usually a popularity contest, but it usually feels like when you go to I'm out here. I'm in Torrey Pines, and they just played the U.S. Open here. And as long as the U.S. Open has, you know, they always say the top 28 players, the top 50 players in the world are attending, then the field is great. And I think a lot of times with the All-Star games, if the biggest names are in attendance, it feels like they've done their job. And I always looked at the All-Star game as, I think every team should be represented. I think that's critical. But I do think that at times we don't have we actually don't reward those that have had the best first half of the season. And I think we are doing that. I do think there's a lot of pent-up excitement about getting back to these games, having people in the stands, and in those markets where baseball is the fabric. I don't want to digress, but we just finished the College World Series. Mississippi State had 23,000 people in Omaha for those games. If you were to select a college all-star team, Mississippi State, Arkansas, LSU would all have players represented because their fans are so passionate. Cincinnati's the same way. I was with our director, Scott Johnson, who's been doing the College World Series for 31 years, Buster, in the golf cart while we were preparing for our game, because we would sit in golf carts often. He would have the Cincinnati Reds game up. I said, "We should have Castellanos in the home run derby." He said, "Castellanos and Winker, you should have them both." So the connection between the fan bases in those cities, and I think Boston too in a lot of ways, given what they've done and where they are in the standings, reflect not only, hey, we're proud of our city, but these guys should be in. Just, people have voices now, as we're seeing in a lot of different areas. It's good to see them reflected by the All-Star starters. So that they're the best players so far. They should play.
Yep. The Reds have only had two outfield All-Star game starters in a single year once before. This from our friend Sarah Langs. 1956, Gus Bell and Frank Robinson. So to see that was pretty cool. You know, the whole thing, we have to see the complete teams before we talk about quote-unquote snubs. The one guy that I'm really rooting for and hope that he finds his way is Cedric Mullins of the Orioles, who I just love his story, how he's evolved as a player, worked his tail off. You know, to me, he can make a strong argument. He should be in the starting lineup. I just hope that he's there, you know?
I would agree with that. You know, at some point, you know, I understand Frazier and the Pirates. At some point, I think people they'll be able to discover somebody like Cedric Mullins. The Orioles are obviously a non-story as far as the races go this year, so it's very difficult to have the national voice say, "I want to see Cedric Mullins." spite of what he did early in the year, in spite of his speed, in spite of his defense. So I would agree with you. I'm more impressed with the starters that were named as opposed to or obsessing over getting Cedric Mullins or anybody other, you know, anyone else like that in, because those are feel good stories as opposed to the guys that actually have earned it. But I certainly would have no problem putting Cedric Mullins on the national stage. He's a great player, but he's also a phenomenal personality.
Hal Steinbrenner clearly puts the onus on the player. He backs Brian Cashman, backs Aaron Boone. It's unusual to hear a baseball owner or an owner of any other professional sports team put it more on the players than on the front office, but that's what he did. What did you think?
Yeah, I loved it, and especially with his last name. That's never associated with a Steinbrenner decision. It's, let's fire Billy Martin four times, and I'm pissed at the players, and how do we get rid of that player? And in this case, the idea that he stood up for both of those guys, I found it fascinating. So he's right. I do think, though, that at some point, you do have to look at the players. You know, we were having a conversation last night with a bunch of baseball folks after this sort of proclamation by Hal, and they all kind of started yelling about, well, look at how good the players are. Look at how good Giancarlo Stanton is. And at some point, you have to say, well, wait a minute. You know, he's got some greatness in him, but how consistently good is he? Are they a team capable of doing the things that Hal Steinbrenner thinks they are capable of doing, and many others think they're capable of doing? I'll be honest, I'm jury out on that right now. I'm not certain that group, which I was all in on preseason, is capable of being the best team in the American League. It's hard to look at them and think they're not, but at some point, maybe you look at them through a different lens and wonder, well, are they really that good? I mean, are they as good as or as deep as the Red Sox and the Rays? I'm not sure. You know, I'd say that I'm a little more skeptical about their abilities than I once was, and am really waiting to see how it plays out. I'm glad he did that. I think he's right to say, well, these players got to play better. We're paying them all these money, and they had a track record. They're not performing the way that they should, but I'm not sure that the should is applicable the way it once was. I'm just not.
No, and I got to say, and I agree, you know, it's mostly on the players. You can understand, you know, this is a group of players who've had a lot of success, put a lot of runs on the board in the past, but I also have disagreed with the roster construction the Yankees have done in recent years.
I agree.
When they've gone so heavily right-handed. Yeah. I get that the analytics, you know, view big picture versus specific series, but I think to have a lineup that's so stacked on the right side has made it so much easier for managers, and I absolutely have not understood that. I want to ask you about the Chicago Cubs. 6.5 games out of first place. According to FanGraphs this morning, their playoff chances are 13.5%. I sent out a poll on Twitter this morning asking the question, should they be buyers or sellers? We're, 28 days before the trade deadline. I got 8,537 votes in. 84% say sell. Carl, I kind of think if you could have a window into the minds of Cub ownership, Cubs front office, that might be kind of where they're leaning to. 84% at this point sell versus buy.
To me, Buster, they were leaning that way before the season started. I don't know how we would look at the Cubs if we're going to frame it in buyers or sellers. They've been sellers from last offseason. That's what they are. We are selling off good pieces so that we can be better down the road. You were and are a seller. I'm sorry. And I love the way that they were playing, but let's assume that perhaps they're regressing to the mean here. This is who they are. This is what the front office knew that we were going to end up at. So to me, they have been sellers. That's what they are, and nothing about their performance, and especially now that we're at the All-Star break and 6.5 games out, would indicate otherwise. They have valuable pieces that other teams are going to want. They're in a good spot to sell and begin to rebuild. But the idea that we're framing it, should they be, they already have declared themselves sellers before we got into this season, my opinion.
All right. And I want to ask you before you go about the situation with Trevor Bauer. We heard Dave Roberts, the Dodger manager, say that it's out of our hands. Major League Baseball is in the process of investigating the situation. First and foremost, and you and I both love Dave Roberts, that is just simply not accurate. It's not out of their hands. They don't have to start Trevor Bauer on Sunday. against the Washington Nationals. But I think what he's referring to more is the fact that they feel like that they're waiting for some directive from Major League Baseball. Personally, yeah. Carl, as yeah. you know, I've read all the stories. You read all the stories about the situation. I want more information. You know, I'm curious to see what happens. We're all waiting and seeing what the DA decides on what to do with Trevor. There is that 7-day window that Major League Baseball can create for itself by effectively putting Trevor Bauer on administrative leave. That to me at this moment seems like a solution that they should explore. But as I say, I want to see more information. What about you?
Yeah, I think the sensitive subject nature here causes people first to recoil because the details are so graphic and so out there, you know, and it takes most people out of their comfort zone. So you're reading things and hearing things that are very uncomfortable. And to make a judgment of the things you're reading is rather, to me, it's rather easy to jump to a conclusion. And I think the out of our hands is the plea to have somebody else make a decision before we have to, or say something about a subject that we're not truly comfortable with, we don't particularly agree with, or we do agree with it and we don't want to share that. I think it's a very sensitive, obvious subject that's here. And I think you get into all sorts of questions about individuals' rights and their own personal lives versus their public lives. I think to me that comment from Dave is, we need help here. You know, I'm not sure we're comfortable to decide what to do about a pitcher. And if this is some particular behavior that he was involved with that was consensual, does that put us in a position to become judge and jury on someone's off-the-field life? So those types of things, I think, are very uncomfortable. And therefore, I think the Dodgers are looking for a little help on this.
Yeah, and I think that one thing that's important, it's pretty apparent as we read more information about this, that you've got essentially the information's coming from two camps which have their own, you know, have their own perspective on this. And we have not heard, like, I really do want to hear from the DA in terms of what they find, because the DA seems to be the one person with subpoena power who can talk to everybody and get more information about what exactly happened here. All right, Carl, have fun this weekend. I'm dying for my daughter to get married someday because I want to sit there and cry openly. So have fun with that.
I will absolutely have a blast. Thanks, Buster, very much. Talk to you soon.
Dogs are an important part of our lives. That means protecting them from parasites. Ask your vet about NexGard Plus, a Foxaloner, Moxidectin, and Pyrantel chewable tablets. NexGard Plus Chews provides one-and-done monthly protection against fleas, ticks, heartworm disease, roundworms, and hookworms. Plus, they're delicious and easy to give. Use with caution in dogs with a history of seizures or neurological disorders. Dogs should be tested for existing heartworm infection prior to starting a preventive. Ask about NexGard Plus Chews.
For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by.
Todd Radom is the chief executive of our weekly quiz. He's a graphic artist whose work can be seen on ball fields all across America, all around the world, or you can go to his website, toddradom.com. Todd, how are you doing this week?
I'm doing well, Buster. How are you today?
I'm doing great. Your name came up in conversation the other day with the great Tyler Kepner of the New York Times, who, as I said to him, you know, he probably has more of an eye for uniform style than just about any writer other than you. Because you do, not only are you a graphic artist, but you're an excellent writer. And he made it very clear, Tyler, that he does not like this year's All-Star Game unis. And so we said on the podcast Wednesday, look, you know what? We got to go to the expert, the Todd father, Todd Radom. What say you about the All-Star Game uniforms?
Well, Buster, I am an avid reader of Tyler's. I am also honored to be a friend. And I always see when he slips in a uniform reference here and there. So, yes, he is enthusiastic and knowledgeable about this. So here's my take. Nike, a behemoth. I think Nike did something like $37 billion worth of retail sales last year. Maybe they know more than we do. But even if they did, here's what's going on. Speaking of billions, we need Sarah Langs to run the numbers, right? Bring everybody in. But Nike also has a $1 billion 10-year contract, something like that, with MLB. And they're going to do what they want to do. And they are going to utilize an exhibition game like the All-Star Game as their laboratory for experiment, perhaps. And I'm just going to pile on and talk about these uniforms and say, you know, vomit emoji, whatever, you know, whatever is applicable. It's a series of disparate elements that don't hang together. We've got, you know, type, vertical type, stacked. The human eye does not read letters that way. You and I both know that. We've got floral trim details, which I'm not quite understanding. I do understand the fact that we've got some coloration in these jerseys that pertains to where this game was supposed to have been, which was Atlanta. Short notice, understandable. But Buster, there's a lot going on with these that I just don't get. And I always say that, you know, aesthetics and visual taste are very subjective. But boy, there's been a universal outcry against these, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I, you know, said they just look like bad softball uniforms to me, like a bad idea. I don't like them, and I don't have any style, as we established in the podcast.
All right. Well, you know, the one thing that Tyler did point out, which I agree with too, and you know, baseball rooted in tradition, and we are so used to seeing the AL and the NL squads line up along their respective base paths in these different uniforms. I'll be in Denver. It's going to be my 25th straight All-Star game. And I always take note of the fact that the San Francisco Giants, when they are wearing their home uniforms, they wear cream. It's a little bit of a different hue than all those white uniforms that the rest of the NL home clubs wear. And it used to be that you'd have, you know, different grays and powder blues. So that tradition is important to see that kind of wick away for crass marketing and merchandising, which helped pay what, you know, send me into my dotage. I get it, but it's kind of sad to see.
So mull this over. I want you to answer this next week. I raised this on Sunday Night Baseball. As you were just talking now about the Giants uniform, I asked Matt Viscursion and Alex Rodriguez, is there a whiter white than the Dodgers home uniform? Okay, just mull that over and give me the answer, because I know you well enough to know you're going to have a technical answer for that, which I'm looking forward to. This week's Forgotten Franchise, not surprisingly, is tied to Buffalo.
That's right. So Buffalo. Buster, last weekend, I was in Buffalo, having seen the Buffalo Blue Jays take on Baltimore. So it only seems appropriate to discuss the National League's Buffalo Bisons, a team that spent seven seasons as a big league club from 1879 to 1885. The Bisons were good, but never great. And despite the fact that for four seasons, they featured four future Hall of Famers on their roster, Put Galvin, Jim O'Rourke, Deacon White, and Dan Brouthers, they never finished above third place in an eight-team National League. Galvin, baseball's first 300-game winner, pitched over 70 complete games in both 1883 and 1884 and won 46 games in each of those seasons. He is also remembered as baseball's first juicer, the first player to be widely known for using a performance enhancer as a member of the Pittsburgh Alleghenies, now the Pirates, in 1889. This is at the tail end of his career. Galvin, then a fading superstar who was nursing a sore arm, consumed an elixir made, Buster, of monkey testosterone that was thought to contain energizing powers.
Well, of course.
Of course, as one does. He pitched a 9-0 two-hit shutout against a very strong Boston club, and his performance and the reason for his enhancement was lauded by the Washington Post the following day. Galvin was also a friend of Buffalo Mayor and future president Grover Cleveland. As for the Bisons, they missed out on their window of opportunity to win, and this led to a plummeting attendance and attendant financial woes. In September 1885, ownership unloaded the entire roster to the Detroit Wolverines for a mere $7,000, and the Buffalo franchise was dropped from the league after the conclusion of the season. The Bisons became a minor league club in the newly formed International League in 1886, and the current version of the Buffalo Bisons eventually assumed the history of the NL Bisons, this week's forgotten franchise.
That's awesome. There's so much in there. That's so cool.
Testosterone Buster.
Monkey testosterone. Yeah, I get the feeling there's probably some current player at some point may have thought, you know, if there was an opportunity, maybe a pitcher would use monkey testosterone on the ball, right?
It could be. Or it could be a great band name, too.
True. So tell me what your impressions were about the ballpark in Buffalo.
Yeah, I've been to the ballpark before for a minor league game, but Buster, it was really quite amazing and very impressive how they decked the place out in the offseason and made it really seem like a Blue Jays home. You know, this is done, you know, this is my, we've been to a lot of major league stadiums, you and I, but there are very few, you know, temporary homes like this, but they really, I think did a good job. And what an unusual experience. The game that I went to was attendance was a shade under 6,000 people. So this very small scale, seeing a major league game was really unusual. The ballpark, Salem Field, was the first retro designed stadium a couple of years before Camden Yards.
Wow.
So, yeah. So interesting piece of the puzzle there. But also just seeing around the ballpark how they shoehorned in all the trappings needed to host a major league visiting team, too. There are big tents out behind right field that you've probably seen. I got on top of that parking garage out there to look down on that, just to kind of walk around and see what's going on. And they've got weight rooms out there, all that stuff. But it was a really cool, interesting experience. I will say, Buster, that the scuttlebutt around Buffalo is that the locals are not happy about having to pay major league prices, because maybe they're used to a $7 beer that's now $12. Wow. And maybe the ticket prices are not quite what they're used to either.
Hmm. Yeah, I hadn't thought about that. That if you're a fan there and you're used to paying a certain price for baseball, to see it jacked up that much. I wonder if there's some way to you know, because certainly there's been a lot of accommodation by Buffalo to help out Major League Baseball, to help out the Blue Jays. So anyway, all right, Let's get this week's quiz.
All right, guys. So I don't know if you know what happened last week, but Taylor, let's just say that Christina, you know, this counts toward your record, even though you were both not around. What? Christina got a win, and Dave Schoenfield pinch hit and struck out for Buster is all I'm going to say.
That counts against my record?
Yeah, it does.
I think that's the way it works, Buster. I'm going to consult the big, thick book bound in Moroccan leather and dust it off. And yes, that is what the rules say.
Well, and you are the chief executive of the weekly quiz. So
Section 9, Codicil 6A.
Rules are rules.
So that's where we are. But, you know, you have a chance to regain what you lost last week. So here we go. Which one of these events took place most recently? Is it A, PNC Park in Pittsburgh hosted its first game? B, Ichiro Suzuki signed his first contract with the Seattle Mariners? C, Wander Franco was born? D, Albert Pujols made his MLB debut? Took place most recently. PNC Park opens, Ichiro signs his first Mariners contract, Wander Franco is born, or Albert Pujols makes his MLB debut?
Wow. I love that set of questions. Go ahead, Taylor.
Oh, boy. Let's go with the young guy. Let's go Wander Franco was born.
Oh, boy. Gosh. I'm going to go Albert Pujols makes his debut.
You are both incorrect. You're both close. However, PNC Park in Pittsburgh hosted its first game on April the 9th, 2001, whereas Wander Franco was born on March 1st, 01. Amazing. Albert Pujols made his debut on April the 2nd, 2001, and way back on November 18th, 2000, Ichiro signed with the Mariners. So We have a stalemate this week once again.
Yes.
That's what are you doing? Yes, Taylor, you're trying to catch me. You're actually trying to get these right.
I know, but I don't want you to get them right. So it's
Do I get any partial points there, Todd, for being closer?
There are no participation trophies, no partial points. Yes, you know, snowflake. Come on, Buster. What is this? This is no.
It's a debacle. All right. Thanks, Todd.
All right, guys. Thanks.
Jumping into the numbers. This is Hembo Knows on Baseball Tonight.
Hembo is Paul Lambikides, a researcher at ESPN, a honcho on the show Get Up. And I mean, he was viewed as a wild partier until we started to hear about Taylor Schwenk's machination that he goes out and about. I asked Taylor, or I plan on asking Taylor at some point about how many drinks that he's going to ingest starting today over the four-day holiday weekend. What about you, Hembo? How many drinks over 4 days?
Taylor's gonna lose count. Not only Buster, do I have a 4 day weekend, but Get Up is dark for a few days next week, and I have another vacation, a little family reunion action. So I'm gonna probably lose count. I'll probably make my way back to New Jersey a few pounds heavier, and hopefully I still have it in my heart to find a way onto the podcast next week somewhat sober. So that's the objective.
Yeah, just, drink some coffee, have some water, sort of get settled in before you go back into oblivion after I got to tell you, we've heard from Brewers fans this week. They want more Brewer talk. And I can always rebut all of that by saying, hey, I picked the Brewers to win the division. Mm-hmm. But the reason why I picked them was because I listened to you.
Mm. I appreciate that. The Brewers were a team I liked then, and they're a team I liked even more now, Buster. And I've identified three reasons why they're the best team in baseball right this second. One, their outfield defense has gone from being a liability to a strength. Milwaukee ranks first in the sport at converting fly balls into outs. It ranked 23rd last season. Now, Jackie Bradley Jr. hasn't hit a lick, but he can still go get it, as we saw yesterday. Two, Buster, they found an answer at shortstop in Willie Adames. Brewers shortstops were batting 179 before trading for him. And since, he has already produced nearly 1.5 wins above replacement in 37 games. Milwaukee owns the best record in baseball since making that trade. And three, their pitching staff, especially their relievers, are unfazed. Opponents are batting 144 with an OPS of 496 and a 36% strikeout rate in high leverage plate appearances. Buster, all three of those figures rank first across baseball.
Sunday Night Baseball this weekend, Mets against the Yankees. And what I love about the series is it feels like both teams are on edge. Mm. The Mets are in first place, but at the same time, it does feel like that they've kind of missed some opportunity to separate themselves in the National League East. And the Yankees clearly on edge with their owner coming out and talking about how the onus is on the players to turn this around. Talk to me about the Mets offense.
My goodness. Well, the Mets have squandered opportunities this season to distance themselves because the pitching has been so freaking good, but they just can't generate any runs. In fact, by one standard of measure, they're the worst team in baseball at doing that. What I did, Buster, was exclude home runs from the picture. So I was able to subtract all runs scored via the home run and see what teams can produce without them. The Mets rank dead last in baseball by that measure. They average 1.9 runs per game without homers. The Yankees rank 29th. They average 2.1 games without home runs. So on Sunday night, even though it's not the ideal pitching matchup, if you're not going to see the ball fly over the yard, you're probably not going to see a high-scoring ball game.
And oh, by the way, since they fired their hitting coaches, their batting average has dropped. Their OPS is lower. Okay? People have brought that up. They've turned around. The offense has not turned around. And I understand they have injuries, but I can tell you there were players on that team who were really upset with that change, and the numbers have not gotten better for the offense. All right, the Yankees lineup and balance is a big topic of conversation. I did radio this morning, KJZ, about what Hal Steinbrenner said yesterday, and I said, yeah, generally I agreed with the idea that it's on the backs of the players, but it's not a well-constructed lineup or roster.
No, it's not, Buster, and we can quantify that. Here's what I mean. Yankees hitters this season have a platoon advantage on only 43% of their plate appearances. That ranks 29th in baseball and is on pace for the lowest Yankees mark in the season for which data is available. We can go back to 1974 for that stat. The last time the Yankees won the World Series in 2009, their hitters enjoyed a platoon advantage at the highest rate in baseball. That was 70% of their plate appearances in 2009. So look, it's very clear. The Yankees have a bunch of really good right-handed hitters, or at least right-handed hitters for whom the back of the baseball card is pretty impressive, even if they're not performing up to expectation this season. But that aside, it's 100% accurate in saying that the lineup balance is a major issue for the Yankees in such an unprecedented way that going back over the last 50 years, it hasn't been this kind of thing. And obviously you build your lineup for the ballpark for which you play in, and the front office just has not done a good enough job at doing that in the Yankees case. Of that, there's no question.
It's interesting. I know internally in the Yankees conversations, they don't feel like that the ballpark is necessarily built for left-handed hitters. They feel like right-handed hitters actually fare better. I would disagree with that. And I also think that when you face good teams in important games, you are just absolutely putting it on a tee for the opposing manager to run out effective right-handed relievers just to mow down groups of right-handed hitters. Chris Sale spoke very positively with reporters about where he feels like he is as he comes back. To me, he might turn out to be the biggest addition before the trade deadline for any contender.
That's a good way of putting it, Buster. It's a good way of framing it, given how effective we know he can be when he's at his best or even close to being at his best. And the Red Sox are a much better ball club than I expected, and I think a lot of people expected coming into this season. I do think that he'll provide them a nice shot in the arm, and I'm very curious to see the kind of workload that Alex Cora allows him, right? Because I think obviously it's in an ideal world, he can give you five or six innings every fifth or sixth day. Who knows if he'll be able to do that? But what we do know is that so long as he's reasonably healthy, the stuff is going to play up. So in almost any capacity, especially if he's used as a reliever or as an opener type, whatever they choose to do, I think he'll be exceptionally effective in that kind of capacity. What would worry me if I were a Red Sox fan is the volume of innings that they ask him to throw. I would err on the side of fewer, especially at the very beginning. That's obviously huge for him, because if he's pitching meaningful innings for them in September and even October, that's what matters most. And if that's the sixth, seventh, or eighth innings, then more power to him.
If, in fact, the Cubs turn into sellers, and I think they will be, you know, as of today, 13.5% chance of making the postseason. If I were to bet on Craig Kimbrell's landing spot, I think it's going to be the Red Sox. What would you think?
I like that a lot. If you add Craig Kimbrell to Chris Sale to what is an outstanding lineup and a team that's playing really, really well right now, there's no obvious reason to me why this club couldn't be considered the favorite, or at least amongst them, to get out of the American League, which for my money is just wide open. And I think the Red Sox are recognizing that opportunity. The Yankees aren't the team that anybody thought they would be. The White Sox were the other potential juggernaut. They're as injured as anybody. So there's no obvious reason why the Red Sox can't go all in. The bullpen is an issue. The pitching staff is obviously the area that they need to go after. Chris Sale is an enormous shot in the arm. And Craig Kimbrell, especially if he's not going to cost you an arm and a leg, makes all the sense in the world to me. He's erratic, and that's what concerns me about anytime Craig Kimbrell, when the base runner allowance is higher than you'd like, that obviously you're playing with fire. But considering what's going to be available at the trade deadline, that makes all the sense in the world to me.
All right, Hembo, hang in there and make sure you're a little bit sober when I talk to you next week.
Most definitely. And I just have to say, I am thrilled for all of our Brewers fans who are going to get the opportunity to have their team showcased on Sunday Night Baseball. Just a quick story, Buster. I had the chance to go see a game at Miller Park a couple years ago. It was a 6:00 p.m. game on a Monday night. No joke. I was in a line with literally hundreds of cars to get into the parking lot in order to tailgate. For my money, Milwaukee is one of the best baseball towns in America. And I am thrilled for that fan base, how good that team is right now. And America's going to get to see that later this month.
Yeah, it's going to be fun. We've had him on Sunday Night Baseball a couple times since I've been on on that show, and I'm excited to go back there. And I told Taylor at the top of the show, I'm like, I get to eat a bratwurst in Milwaukee. It can't get better than that.
Later, boys.
Bleacher Tweets.
Alrighty, Buster. Bleacher Tweets for a Friday. First up, we have George Franco at GE Franco 32. George writes in, the Braves bullpen has lost many games this year, ? I think that's more of a statement. And he says, wouldn't Kimbrell returning to Atlanta be the perfect fit?
Perfect. And I got to tell you, we mentioned yesterday that in terms of volume of interest, Craig Kimbrell would be at the top of the list of any player in baseball. Like, all teams could use Craig Kimbrell. He'd be a perfect fit for the Braves. He'd be a perfect fit for the Yankees. He'd be a perfect fit for any team that's trying to win a World Series this year. If I had to guess as of this moment, I'm betting on the Red Sox. I think that's the team that's going to wind up with Craig Kimbrel. We'll just have to wait and see.
All right. Last one for the week. Robert Beretta at Holler at Rob writes in, "Hey Buster, the Phillies seem to be missing everything needed to be a contender and should be selling. Aside from a big name like Aaron Nola, who else do you think teams might be interested in dealing for?"
Actually thinking about writing a column about this. If I'm the Phillies, I am absolutely marketing Zach Wheeler right now. You know, he's at the middle of this contract that was signed pre-pandemic. The financial context has changed. He would have value in the market. You would have teams interested in him. And let's face it, as the Phillies move forward, they're going to have to restructure their payroll in the way that they're spending their money. And now would be a great time to get rid of that contract. Much in the same way we saw the Cubs during the offseason wanting to sort of shake things up financially. They move Yu Darvish and, you know, got good return. I don't think trading Zach Wheeler this winter would be nearly as easy given all the CBA uncertainty.
Alrighty, that does it for Bleacher Tweets. Hashtag Bleacher Tweets on Twitter while you're watching games. No show on Monday. It is a official company holiday to observe the 4th of July. And happy 4th, everyone. I know it's not everyone's hat, but I'm a big fan, and I like to view it as a kind of a hopeful holiday. You know, even if you're down on good old US of A, you know, think about the future and think about what you have.
So if we include today as part of the holidays, over the next 4 days, how many drinks ingested for you?
Ooh, boy. It might be a little bit on the slower side because we don't have any definitive plans. I am planning on going to the local pub on Saturday to watch England-Ukraine. So that could be interesting.
That would be so much fun. You're going to have a blast.
Yeah. It'll be a good time for sure. So definitely not. I'll put it like, let's go 22 for the weekend.
Wow.
3 days. Shoot, it's three days, Buster.
I don't know how you do it. It's amazing. All right, that's it for today. My thanks to Carl, to Hembo, to Todd, to Taylor. Have a great day, everybody. Thanks for listening. Have a great weekend. Stay safe. And remember, hate and inequality based on skin color is something we need to fight against every single day.
Thanks for listening to the Baseball Tonight podcast. If you're playing fantasy baseball, check out the Fantasy Focus podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. The Baseball Tonight Podcast.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.